Hey there, Flashketeers. Just so you know, this is part two of a two-part episode. You should probably go back and listen to the previous part, just so we're on the same page. But if you have, then buckle up, because we are going to be going all in on an exploration of some of the animations of Homestuck. Just so you know, both of the cartoons we talk about this time do have some flashing lights and colors, so be warned. And with that warning intact, let's go into part two. We grew up in a world of online animation, and we're digging you out for your consideration, bringing you the tunes that made us who we are. Flash in the pan. Okay, and that is going to bring us to what is kind of our main event. Certainly the impetus for asking you to be on in the first place, Michael. So, as you mentioned earlier, Homestuck, the webcomic turned multimedia empire, turned bizarre in-joke footnote historic event. had several animations as part of its story, and they were ways that, obviously, they're part of the story, right? Like, things are happening in these animations that are, like, you know, key plot things and, like, major events. But also they were ways of getting other people to notice, hey, like, you know that webcomic? It's got some cool cartoons. And we're going to be talking about a couple of the most infamous slash influential. I believe we're starting with, what's it called? Is it Ascend? Is it Jack Ascend?
It's, yeah, Jack Ascend.
Alex, can you tell us what was going on?
No. I have actually seen this before.
You have seen this before?
Yes.
Tell like willingly?
So I know that you weren't a big Homestuck back in the day.
No, like there was a point, I say a point, but like, you know, that's been kind of ongoing where a lot of people were talking about Homestuck all at once. I went off, you know, I'm gonna try and just read it from the start. And I got to, I don't remember exactly where, I got to a point where the plot just got too confusing for me to follow and threw my hands up and went, I think I'm maybe not smart enough for this. I'm gonna go back to watching things like a linear plot line, because I'm lost. I'm sorry. I'm too dumb for Homestuck.
I don't think too dumb for Homestuck is a phrase that makes any sense. Really?
My brain just couldn't keep up with what was, like, I was trying to hold, like, all the different information it was giving me in my head, which is maybe my first mistake. And eventually everything it was trying to tell me was just like going in one ear and falling out the other, and I was like, okay, I think this maybe just is not for me.
I think that's a reasonable response.
Yeah.
But
in the process of reading what I did read, I did see this.
And yet its meaning is lost.
Yeah, I don't remember any of this.
Okay. Well, okay, in that case, let's see if we can reverse engineer what we think is going on. Mm-hmm. There's a guy, a little black gremlin guy with sharp teeth. He lives on an alien planet next to an asteroid field. The planet is named as Durs. Mm-hmm. And he
Durs, I do remember. Yeah. I remember that did. I saw that and was like, that I remember. Remember that?
Yeah. He got a parking citation and he's very angry at someone.
Right.
And then a sexy lady appears and she's got a sword through her and also wings. And Black Gremlin guy goes out to see her and she tries to make him wear a litany of silly outfits while. And then she kind of poses seductively on a chaise longue. Oh, no, sorry, on his desk, sorry. Yeah. And Jack is very upset at this. Then there's a girl in a room with meow written all over the walls.
Yes.
And, and then it's a cloud world with a little horse and a 60s woman is doing battle with a giant ogre. And also there's a 60s dad doing battle with a different giant ogre in a different world.
Yes.
But that's not important. Back to the gremlin guy. He's really angry at his boss lady and chops off her finger, which kills her, dropping the ring, which he then puts on and transforms into the same kind of beast that she was with giant wings and a sword through him. And then it says, end of year 1, 4/13/2009 to 4/13/2010. And we get a shot of a giant orb and meteors hurtling towards the suburbs. And that's what Homestuck is. So thank you for listening.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I still don't understand.
Okay.
So there's a podcast.
Yes, tell me more.
Actually, I condensed down the podcast into a YouTube video that's entirely my plot summaries of Homestuck, and it's about 5 hours long.
I was going to say, there's no way that's condensed.
Well, like, the podcast itself, I think, runs for about 72 hours if you just let it go. So 5 of that is me summarizing the plot.
It's very ambitious, yes. So what's happening here is we are seeing, like, the birth of the big bad of the story.
Right, okay.
So, like, little black gremlin guy, clearly annoyed at his lot in life, makes a play for power, succeeds, coups whoever the boss lady is, and gains her power, and, now that he has tasted blood, is ready to wreak havoc? Question mark. We'll see. Thanks for watching. Thanks for reading for a whole year. but also, meanwhile, there's a girl. That's Rose. She's one of the main kids of Homestuck.
I remember. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Meow is written all over the walls. Because that's actually genetic code, and she's learning something. About DNA, because instead of CGAT, it's MEOW. So what she's looking at is some kind of genome sequence.
Right.
Which will become very plot important. Mm-hmm. And also, the lady is her mum, and the 60s dad looking guy is another character's dad. And we briefly see the other characters, like, asleep or as a ghost. And also there's a dog who is also very plot important for later.
Mm-hmm.
We do get... So one of the kids who is not asleep is John, who is wearing a cool Ghostbusters-themed suit and is riding a giant jetpack with flames drawn on the side. And I remember that particular image being the forum's avatar for at least two people I knew. Yeah. So, Michael, maybe you can fill in a few more of the blanks here. Like, what does this mean in, like, the greater Homestuck scheme?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so at this point, like, the comic's been going for like a year.
Mm-hmm.
So there has been a lot of stuff set up, lots of questions to answer.
Mm-hmm.
What does this represent?
Okay. So, as you already said, this is the introduction of the first kind of main villain of Homestuck. We're going to have like a procession of villains as we go on, because this is, about a quarter of the way through the page count. It's 8,000 pages long. The amount of text on every page will vary a lot, but we're in like the first quarter of Homestuck here. We've got quite a bit of comic left to go. So Jack here is becoming our first kind of villain. And if you listen to Homestuck Made This World, you'll get this more than you could ever possibly want. me reading forums where people are reacting to the updates and then explaining here is how people in the fandom and in the readership are responding to these updates. But the big thing about this is that it really kicked Homestuck excitement for the people who were already reading into a kind of fever pitch, because it represented a culmination of a lot of stuff that had been sort of like milling around. So if you're totally unfamiliar with Homestuck, one of the things you need to know is that as a webcomic, it was a thing that you read, you know, on your computer. It was like some images and some text, and you click through it page by page. It is presented in the form of a computer game, like a text adventure. So you, the conceit is that you are watching these characters who are kind of in a video game, but also, confusingly, the story is about them playing a video game. So they're like within a game within a game. And the narrative represents the commands from a kind of hypothetical reader or player who is trying to play the game, telling them to go here, do this, that, and the other. So the title of this animation, Jack Ascend, is a command, right? That is the narrative telling him to ascend. When Homestuck began, it was coming out of the mold of MS Paint Adventures, which was the previous, it was still in MS Paint Adventures, right? It was a project undertaken by Andrew Hussey, the author of Homestuck and the other MS Paint Adventures, modeled on the old school forum adventure conceit of, I'm a person who can kind of draw a thing, I'm going to post a picture of a situation, people tell me what to do, and then I change the situation based on that. So the earliest parts of Homestuck are in fact driven, quote-unquote, by reader commands. There was a suggestion box where readers could pop in their suggestions for what they thought should happen next, what the characters should do, and so on. And one of the things that this means is that the first quarter of Homestuck is a whole lot of nothing happening, because it's things like, you know, John may want to hang a poster on his wall to celebrate his birthday, but there's also a bunch of people who are putting in commands like, what is it? It's a squawk like an imbecile and shit on your desk.
Yeah.
Right. So there's a tension at play, right, in sort of like the mechanism here between productive action and action that's a lot of time wasting. And then like a layer on top of this is that all of the characters kind of have hysterically convoluted inventory systems that the readers are expected to understand. And they're all modeled on like various types of data structure, and they're intentionally frustrating. So, you know, lots of people picking things up, cakes getting thrown out windows. That's Homestuck for a good long while. About a month before this specific animation goes up, actually, Andrew Hussey stops taking reader commands. And this is a controversial move within the fandom. Ultimately the people who were, you know, not happy with it, like, stopped reading eventually. And those who were okay with it kept going. And just because Hussey stopped taking reader commands, as they say in kind of their responses to some of the people complaining about this, is that they're not going to disengage from the fandom entirely. They're still going to take a look at like what people are saying on the official forums. Eventually, you know, this is 2010, so in about a year, like Tumblr starts happening, and we're going to see lots and lots of fan art on Tumblr, taking kind of cues from fan theorizations of like what I think would be cool to happen next. And if I say this, there's a chance that, you know, Andrew Hussey sees it and incorporates some aspect of it into Homestuck. But Jack really represents this moment of, and Hussey also sort of explains this in their responses to these critics, critiques that they're receiving about closing the suggestion box. If I let the readers continue to put in commands, it is just going to be piddling around and time wasting forever. Like, if we want this story to go anywhere, it's better if, like, I don't have to take every single suggestion and read it over and decide which one I think is going to fit what I actually want to do. Because also, by this point, and this is something else Hussey says, Homestuck has gotten, it is not as popular as it's going to get. It's probably, it's really actually, I was just doing, so Homestuck Made This World was long form research of me, or I'm doing research for a book. And that book is currently being drafted. So I actually was just reading some of this material for the chapter that I'm working on. Homestuck at this point is nowhere near as popular as it is going to get, but it has been getting progressively more popular as the story has gone on, introducing all of these characters, all of these mysteries, like, who are these kids? What are all their parents doing? Why do their parents seem to know more about this game? Why is Rose constantly being given these visions of genetic code and things like that? So people were already kind of like piling in for the escalating mystery of it. And this becomes the moment where Hussey is like, we're going to start like moving forward and answering some questions. So when Jack ascends as this villain, it's one of these markers for the fandom of like, oh, the story's really happening now, right? This is like in the ways that everything had escalated up to that point, this is like the escalation of the escalation. We have a villain now. He is posing a problem because he is that little character, Jack. He's a game NPC. And this video this animation is essentially us seeing him go off track because the kids have unintentionally sequence broken the game in such a way that he is becoming more powerful than he should ever have any right to be. And so that is kind of, the first villain of Homestuck is this NPC who seized too much control. And that is exciting for the fandom in 2010, right? And it's 1 year in, we've got a villain.
That was a really thorough contextualization. Thank you. My experience was, I had been a Hussey fan since their previous project, Problem Sleuth, which was done from 08 to 09. And so I was on board from the beginning of Homestuck. And like you said, it was very meandering, very silly, but also like building up all of these different like characters and questions and like starting to plant some seeds for plot stuff. And then this happens, and like it did feel like there was a shift. It did feel like there was a sea change, right? Because it's like, okay, like the real Homestuck begins now. Like at the time, like we don't know what it's going to become. I don't think anyone could have known what it would become.
No way.
But like it felt, but you know, at the time it was like, okay, yeah, this is going somewhere. Okay, this is like, because this is breaking from the Problem Sleuth like outright anarchy, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because while Problem Sleuth did end up having a plot, even by like the final climax, it was still a lot of weird in jokes and pissing around. Right?
Like they're just like, with this, there's like a flying pirate or like a flying boat, and they're just like spinning it around for 4 months.
Yes, exactly. But this is like, okay, there's momentum. What it would be momentum towards, no one could know. Momentum is not really a word that gets used when talking about Homestuck in hindsight, given how enormous and long and very long-winded a lot of it became. But for those of us who were in the Homestuck mines at the time, right? This was like this is going to go somewhere, and like I remember like. Knowing people who got into Homestuck because this was being shared all over the place, right? This is like very early YouTube, and so people are mostly just linking the actual page of the comic where this is embedded. But everyone's saying, okay, yeah, I think I'm on board. I want to see what this guy's about. Because if we zoom into this tune particularly, right, and we look at the art style, like it's really like striking.
Yeah.
You know, you've got these characters who are like silhouettes, but like they're monochrome, right? But the detailing is really good. Like the personality really comes through. You can tell just with like a single facial expression that Jack is a nasty little guy. Right? And you get all of these little snippets that like it. This almost works as like a trailer for like the first year of Homestuck. Because you get all of these little snippets of action happening. You're like, wait, I want to see what's going on there. What's like, there's a guy with a sword and a giant lava monster. What? Huh? I gotta get clicking. And it's only been 1,000 pages. So I can catch up with that in a couple of weeks. But yeah. And so this was a big deal, and I think it's really interesting to compare this to how later movies in the Homestuck canon would be made and would be received, because as Michael said, Homestuck only gets more ambitious, and the animations are where you see that the most, I think.
Yeah, because this is, I mean, all the art probably is by Hussey. That at this point, Hussey has said there are a couple places where I think like some little background details got made by some other people, but I think the primary artist here is Hussey through and through. Hussey also, I don't think, was that familiar with Flash itself, or rather, to put it differently, in reading Hussey talking about the process of making Homestuck, it is clear that they taught themselves a lot about making Flash in the process of making Homestuck, that there were things that they didn't really know, like workflows and so on. And this is, even if you go back and watch like the first Flash animation, which is like, we should have done that because it's 4 seconds long. It's a kid looking up at the sky. But it, you can tell like the Hussey's like comfort level in terms of like what they like want to do, but also like are capable of doing, right, is really changing. And just also they have this almost instinctive visual sense, as you said, like the character designs are just so good at telling you like who these dudes are at a look.
Yeah, like the boss lady, the black queen, like okay she's big, she's tall, she's sexy, like she's one of the only characters in Homestuck that is actually drawn like kind of sexy, as opposed to like a weird little blob creature. But also like she's like completely confident and completely in control, and thus completely unsuspecting when Jack makes his run for power. We can tell visually that like Jack and the Queen character are also the side characters who showed up in an interlude earlier on.
Right.
The Midnight Crew, who get a shout out at the start of this animation from the song that's used in it.
Right. Yeah, and that's again like more of the like the mystery box style storytelling of one of the things that became clear in doing Homestuck Made This World is that like Hussey was deeply in conversation with Lost, the television program. And sort of just being able to be like, here's a mystery, here's a mystery, here's a mystery, and rather than solving any one mystery, just like using the solution of that mystery to hook into a larger one. So, like, we can recognize that Jack and the Black Queen are Spade Slick and Snowman from the intermission, but how? Are they the same Jack and Black Queen? But no, she just died, so they gotta be like, what's going on? I have to keep reading. I gotta go to the Homestuck website the next day.
Yeah, yeah. Not just the Homestuck, but I gotta start updating the fan wiki.
I gotta install the browser extension that alerts me the second the page is updated.
Oh yeah. Like I know many people, including my boyfriend, who would just like, you know, like DM me, and instead of saying anything, they just say update. Because right? Like you know what that means, and so you rush to the site immediately. And sometimes that was happening multiple times a day.
Yeah. 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 It's after this that a couple months after this, it's like the summer of 2010 that I remember most strongly, like Hussey would update like 3 times a day and at really bizarre times, too.
Yeah. Yeah. It is very clear that they did not have a healthy work-life balance.
No. No.
But Alex, I want to come back to you.
Okay.
So, did you like this cartoon? Is a big question. Can you see yourself being the sort of person who, if you saw this out of context, would be like, I want to know more about that.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. It's like really, it's weird. It's very, very well put together. As we've said, the art style on its own is striking enough to like catch my eye to the point where I'm like, where? If I didn't know what the song was, like, what is this from? Like, how does it get to this point? And how do I find out more? I do like it. It's, but on the other hand, I have just been sat here listening to you guys talk for like the last however long with my mouth slightly open.
Sorry.
Because I as much as I appreciate the art form and the community of hosts look like, you know, much love to all of you. It is not compatible with my brain.
I think that's okay. Well, how about before we move on to our last cartoon, I'm gonna drop something else on your brain.
Okay.
You know who did this song?
Does it begin with Toby
and end with Fox?
Fox.
It sure does.
So
this song is Black by Toby Radiation Fox. It samples like an old music hall song from like the 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
Called The Midnight Crew.
He does like his weird music samples. It's cool.
And I've never known, and maybe you can shed some light onto this, Michael, I've never known whether that was just a coincidence that there was a song called The Midnight Crew that fit aesthetically, mm-hmm. or if the person who came up with The Midnight Crew characters already knew the song and had them in mind.
So as best as I've been able to reconstruct this, because an important thing to know is that the official MSPA forums were obliterated. They're still like sort of half, you can access them through Wayback. In very small pieces, and it's extremely awkward and difficult to do, and not all of it is there. But as far as I've been able to reconstruct this, people on the forums dug up the Midnight Crew song kind of on their own, I think at the point that the Midnight Crew, or around the time that the Midnight Crew had been introduced in the comic, because they show up in the intermission, as already said, and they get previewed even earlier than that point when one of the characters, I don't remember who, it might be John or Rose, is told to get on their computer and go to mspaintadventures.com. Yes. And within mspaintadventures.com, in the comic, they are running a Midnight Crew adventure. And so they show up there first. And so the fans, just being what they are, the readers, found this song, The Midnight Crew, and I think it became like a little meme on the MSPA forums. And so when it gets incorporated here by Toby, I think it's just, you know, in reference to the fact that like, yeah, you're hanging out on the forums reading this comic. Like, we know about this song, right? Ha ha ha.
That's wild. That's really fun. Mm-hmm. But and also like that's also like just really unsurprising given mm-hmm. how many other things ended up in Homestuck mm-hmm. and Hussey's previous stuff just coming from being like a weird little in-joke that mm-hmm. spirals out of control. Yeah. I mean, at least we never got a song based on the Muppet Babies comic.
Well, yeah, I guess we didn't. No. Although Toby did make Baby Is You, which is sort of the closest we got.
I was about to make a reference to the Baby Is You.
You know, like, genuinely, I listen to that album, like, at least once a year.
Yeah, I remember, I don't remember who it was, someone linked it to me and was like, this is by Toby Fox, by the way, and I just sat there like, wow, okay.
Yeah, of course. So, that is going to bring us to our final presentation for the evening, and this is a big one. So,
yeah.
Homestuck goes through some changes, goes through some phases, and ends up bringing in a huge new slew of fans. with Act 5, which introduces a boatload more characters and an enormous amount more plot and more mysteries for the increasingly large mystery box. And also, like, in the time between Ascend and this next cartoon, the fandom has exploded. So, mm-hmm. with that context in mind, we're going to watch Cascade. This is going to be a lot. It's not for nothing that the enormous sound of flames right at the end fades in as would an audience applauding.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it's an awful lot. There is so much. So one thing I want to say, I don't think it would be helpful for us to recount the plot.
Yeah.
Up to this point, and especially not within this cartoon, because we would be here for days.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mostly want to talk about this in terms of how it works as like an artistic statement, right? Because there's a lot going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can I think we can talk about how it works in the context of like what Homestuck was mm-hmm. at the time. And again, I'm going to turn to Alex first, because I'm guessing you haven't seen this one.
No, I have not.
How did this just wash over you like sound and noise signifying nothing? Or were there like, bits of this where you were like, yeah.
I have no idea what any of it means.
Yeah. Yeah. But... And like no one could blame you for that reaction.
It looked really cool. And it sounded really cool. Like, the, considering the length of this, which, by the way, at like, two different points, I was like, oh, this is gonna end now. Because I didn't look at how long this was before I clicked it.
Oh, there
that's
you go.
The Homestuck experience.
And then it kept going, and like, I moused over it, and I was like, what do you mean, 14 minutes? But as a 14-minute piece, the music is exceptionally well put together. It fits the mood. It underscores the right parts it needs to underscore, and it's really well composed. That part was the impressive part. To me, because I'm just sat here like, if someone asked me to score this, I'd be like, where the fuck do I even start?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's got a few different phases, right? Like,
yeah.
It's like, and the songs blend into each other, like they transition really well as like, you know, the mood of each one matches what's going on screen, right? Because there are slower moments, there are sadder moments, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there are more intense and action-packed happenings. I was surprised in rewatching this, because I haven't rewatched this since it came out, really. But I was surprised rewatching this, like, how many parallels there are to previous animations, including the Jack Ascend thing. I forgot that, like, one of the main things happening in this is also, like, transformation through this fantastic magic ring thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And also the same character again, Rose, is part of learning some enormous revelation about the nature of things.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That, I mean, that's just a thing that happens to her a lot over the course of it. But just comparing, yeah. But like comparing the two cartoons, like it's neat that it happened twice here.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you're definitely right, Alex, in that it looks really, really good.
Yeah.
As you can tell, by this point, it is not just Andrew Hussey doing the art assets.
No.
Right? And we see a number of different styles here, which I think really works for the most part. It's kind of it is kind of strange seeing so the moments in which there is the most like guest art is like in some of the highest emotional beats of this.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So like we get like a couple of like, again, like kind of mirroring each other, like meaningful stares between between Dave and Rose and between Jade Sprite and Dave Sprite earlier on. And this is the thing that Homestuck did a lot, which was like it's the same shot but in a different context or with different characters.
Mm.
Which Hussey had a fancy name for that I forget.
When you see them as the little blobs, those are sprites, and when they're not blobs, that tends to be called hero mode. Is that what you're thinking of?
There is that, but no, there was a thing that he.
That you mean the repetition?
Yes, I mean the repeating images. Yeah.
Yeah. In the comic, that gets talked about as circumstantial simultaneity.
Yes, that's right. Circumstantial simultaneity, like. Of all the critiques you could make about Andrew Hussey as a creator, lack of vocabulary is not one of them. Hussey never saw a dictionary they didn't love to read. Yeah, but also you get like different, just a lot of different styles in the way that like the settings are made. You know, because you have all these different planets and realms. And you've got these portraits of the characters, and like this feels like so much. I mean, obviously it's much longer, but this feels like a colossal undertaking compared to this is actually kind of tiring, like watching this, because it's an enormous information overload if you've been keeping up with the comic, and if you haven't, then it is all of these. All of these images that are clearly imbued with some kind of meaning that are being blasted at you over and over and over again that do tell a story, but in such an oblique way that I imagine I can only imagine what your brain was experiencing, Alex.
I just kind of defaulted back to a very like primitive just watch the pretty colors mode.
Yeah, it gets you on the pre-verbal reptile brain
level. Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. Also, in terms of the style, I can like there. I know this is partially the guest art, but like it feels like there is meant to be proper emotional weight here. Where in the previous one, it was more like an oh shit, the bad guy's here.
Mm-hmm.
In this, there are moments with characters where you can see that there is more than just confusion or anger happening.
Mm-hmm.
There are complicated things being presented in Solok's maxing his power at the end, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or in the final transformations that we get. It also plays with the frame in a really cool way. So for those of you at home who haven't watched this, I do recommend watching it just so you have an idea of like the scope of this. But we don't just get like different panel in panel shots here and there, but like at an earlier point in the cartoon, Jack Noir, who is now Beck Noir, who the big bad is now also a dog.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry about it. Shoots red tendrils at a giant universe frog in such a way that it expands the borders of the comic itself in a way that I remember being like what the kids would call a poggers moment back in the day. Because yeah, it kind of clues you into, okay, yeah, like the kid stuff is over. This is a big boy cartoon, and you're a big boy.
Yeah, and it really expands the, like, later on we go back to the smaller canvas style, but the outer frame is still being animated with, like, colors that sort of mirror the interior action. It's a really nice touch.
Yeah, and given that one of the major themes of Homestuck is, like, fiction sort of, like, overextending its boundaries, like, of course, let's just make that textual.
Right.
yeah, so Michael, like, rewatching this... Knowing what you know and having had the experience and research that you've done, like, how does it hit you on a revisit?
So, I mean, like, the thing that is always interesting to me about these big animations and the later ones is seeing the different artistic styles that are coming into play here. There are other contributors who I'll talk about in a bit, but one of the really canny things that Hussey did in Homestuck early on was knowingly have different visual styles for, like, different kind of aspects of the comic. Like, I say knowingly, I should say intentionally, right? Intentionally kind of putting discontinuous visual elements together. So, like, when we're looking at the kids, they're these little cartoonish sprites, but, like, many in their, when they're standing in their bedrooms, many of the objects in their bedrooms are, like, photos from, like, Google image search that have been cropped and, like, recolored, right? So you have these visual styles that do not go together in a strict sense, but because from the beginning the comic has been telling you, like, hey, it's cool to have kind of two different visual regimes coexisting side by side, by the time we get up to the point of big arts team contributions, because this, by this point, absolutely, like, that is, Homestuck has an art team, you can allow all of your different artists to kind of go their own way with a piece, rather than having everyone fall into a house style, right? Hussey really, like, capitalizes on this idea that the character designs that they've come up with are templates that have kind of certain elements that you just reproduce in your own style, and that makes your version of that particular character. So I think that that's really, you know, one of the things I really like about this animation and the later ones. And of course, I also always think about just, like, the history of this thing and, or, like, this specific animation, because it was, again, this is not Homestuck's high point. This is about a year out from Homestuck peaking in the Google search trends. But this was still a moment of huge fanfare, and it's impossible for me to watch this animation and not think about the kind of runway that led up to it, and in particular, like, where I was when I was watching it, like, the first time I saw it. And if you listen to Homestuck Made This World, the episode that covers this particular chunk of the comic, I actually do some special tricks where I allow me to dig in to kind of what that was like.
Yeah, well, I think this is a great way to transition into, like, talking about this cartoon in and Homestuck as a thing. So for one last time this episode, I think it's time for some flash.
Let me tell you about Homestuck.
Oh, I have to leave.
Beautiful.
Sorry, that was a knee-jerk reaction.
Yeah. So, Cascade posts on October 25th, 2011, fairly early in the morning, after a two-month-long pause, during which there were no Homestuck updates at all. As you already said, Tom, by this point, the trolls have been introduced, and the trolls are really the moment where, like, the fandom kicks into high gear and lots of wild stuff starts happening. So excitement has only grown additionally from the previous animation. For 2 months, people have been wondering, what is this animation going to be about? What is going to happen? Because the fact that this is, we already mentioned that Hussey had, like, a completely incredible update schedule. This 2 month pause is the longest pause that Homestuck has had since it started. There's also,
and I will say that just to add a little bit of extra thing, like, one thing that we now know to be just a truism is that when you have a really dedicated fan base and the object of their fandom does not end but merely pauses for an indeterminate amount of time, that's when the fan base starts to eat itself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We saw this with Steven Universe. We saw this with Gravity Falls. Like, mm-hmm. this is a thing that is a known quantity. This is a behavior that online fandoms have. And so imagine that, but with Homestuck in 2011.
Right, Homestuck weirdly was innovating in this space. October 2011, like, everyone's like, well, what's going to happen? Because it's also, it's the end of the act. That's the other thing, is this was just like some random flash, but the end of act animations were ones where, like, plot really happened, right? That was capping things off, opening up new things. And by this point, we've introduced another villain, right? Or rather, a villain who's been hinted at consistently, who is somehow even worse than Jack Noir, Lord English. And we've got our first glimpse of him, and there's some sort of implication that he's going to make a play in this animation. So people are also speculating in the fandom. They're like, oh my gosh, is it going to be voice acted? Is it going to be interactive? Because Homestuck also had interactive flash animation. And so Homestuck, Cascade posts at like 1 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and immediately the Homestuck website crashes. It's gone. This is not news, because during big flashes in the run-up to this, the website was always chugging. But the problem here is that Hussey has also gone on record as saying, like, yeah, we're expecting a pretty big surge. In fact, one number that I have found in my research suggests that they were expecting as many as 2 million readers at a time. So there was some sort of reference made, right, on the blog posts and the forum springs about, like, well, we're bringing in something else, right? We are bringing in some help for server load. And it turns out that the help here is Newgrounds. Hussey had worked out a deal with Tom Fulp to host Cascade on Newgrounds. And that doesn't help, because after the MSBA website goes down, so does Newgrounds. And for the next, like, 2 or 3 hours after this happens, the fandom is just like going nuts. Like, people are like, some people were lucky enough that they, like, you know, got the flash file downloaded, and so they're trying to stream it for people. But this is the early days of live streaming, and a lot of rooms have caps on them, and the quality isn't great. You have multiple of these going at a time. People are like, just let us download it, to Hussey on Twitter. Hussey's like, no, I really wanted it to be on the website, because there are certain effects that are only going to work on the website. That's the frame expansion. But eventually Hussey is like, okay, fine, here's a mega upload. Within 15 minutes, the mega upload has been locked, because there was such a demand in traffic that mega upload was like, this isn't right. Like, the automated system kicked in and, like, froze it. So just the excitement for this thing was through the roof. It's really difficult to communicate exactly what it was like. And then the way that it rolls out is both disappointing and also, like, weirdly empowering. Like, people are going nuts. Like, we killed Newgrounds is a thing people are posting everywhere. And at the end, you know, after everyone's, the dust has settled and people have had time to process it, we do one of the famous things that happened, especially as the comic goes on, where people are like, well, wait a minute, I don't understand what I just saw. And then Hussey does a Q&A explaining some of the finer points of the visuals here that don't come across that well. But then we also get kind of the breakdown of who did what. So in addition to art assets made by Hussey for this, there was also contributions from the art team. And many of these people are folks who have gone on to work in, I think continue to work in art and animation in various ways, although not all of them are ones that I can continue to track, because many of them are just credited as screen names that point to long defunct Tumblrs, right?
The classic internet archaeology thing.
Mm-hmm. So art contributors for this include Brett Muller, Eyes5, Laz, Lepu, Lexi, Rebecca Harding, My Lucky Seven, Nick Carey, Paige Turner, Richard Gung, Shad, Skeptic Archer, Sock Puppy, Tavia Mora, Vivas, and Zamag. And some of these people, in particular, Lexi or Alexander Douglas, are known because Lexi, in particular, I think worked for Penny Arcade after this. She was like part of the Penny Arcade, like whatever kind of like the when as Penny Arcade, you know, sort of like burbled up from being a webcomic to being this like larger weird media entity. I believe at one point she was working for them, doing some art and design things. Many of these people contributed to other Homestuck work in particular. So like when you were on the Homestuck art team, it was a true art team, and there was product that happened, right? Official merchandise. You would have the chance to make illustrations for the calendars or things that would go on t-shirts or other type of merchandise. Many of them ended up working for or working on assets for Homestuck Games. Weirdly enough, Tavia Mora is maybe the one that I found the most about specifically, because she's gone on to do some like visual art installations, which is not, it is surprising, but also not surprising, because I also happen to have found out in my research for this, because she contributes to some other things later, like that she's also a dancer. So like she actually, I think, someone on the music team maybe was in a relationship with her and did a remix of one of the Homestuck songs, like specifically for a dance routine that she had. And that actually shows up.
Oh, that's really neat.
That's cool.
Right. It shows up in the comic for one of the much, much later animations. It's used for one of those. And that's, yeah. So, cause it's called like Tavia's Mix or something. It's like something, something Tavia's Mix. And I was like, what's going on there? And that's how I found this out. And then, yeah, the music itself, this song, Cascade, is made up of a whole bunch of leitmotifs from various Homestuck songs. Like, this is another thing that Homestuck does in terms of, like, reusing assets. It's also reusing, like, sonic assets, right? Sounds and melodies. So there's lots of fingerprints on this thing, but ultimately who it gets credited to are three folks. Is that right? Three folks? Maybe it's four. Four. Yeah, let's go four. So one is Tensei, Joran de Bruin, who did some other Homestuck music and most recently was doing some kind of additional Homestuck compositions that are like just a year old on his YouTube channel. Clark Powell also did some music here. Clark, she's still working, still doing music for games. She did the soundtrack to Hussey's follow-up to Homestuck, the visual novel Psychalonials. Malcolm Brown, who is another important Homestuck composer and is still, I think, also doing music, and according to Twitter, making also like independent little games. It looks like little RPGs or something like that. And then Toby Fox, who has done nothing of note that I'm aware of.
No, I don't think he's done anything since Homestuck.
It is a colossal undertaking, and I cannot imagine the amount of logistics and just the amount of coordination with were the art team like on staff as like paid positions, or was this volunteers or a mix?
So my understanding is that it started out in a volunteer capacity and then got to the point where the artists were being paid. Artists and musicians were being paid. I am pretty certain of that, although I don't think many people speak on record. But like they have talked about getting paid, and one of the reasons they want to sell merch, right, is like they get a cut of that. Artists were getting a cut of the musicians were getting cuts of the album sales on Bandcamp and things like that. My understanding is that there was essentially a special forum for the teams, and Hussey would post kind of prompts for, you know, I need an image of so-and-so standing in this kind of way, or this location in this kind of state, and people would do their takes on it, and Hussey would pick the ones that fit their vision best. And I think by the end of all of this, it was a bit more of a guided process of Hussey specifically telling this artist, I want you to do this, and this artist, I want you to do that. And I imagine some of that happened here as well. In particular, Lexi, I think, Lexi was certainly specifically asked to do the big shot of Jade's Resurrection reveal, where we find out she's, you know, the Witch of Space and everything. That's like the classic Lexi style, even. So, you know, that is my understanding of how this all worked.
The effect is, you know, like you said, like this was a sea change, right? Mm-hmm. in what Homestuck was, and especially what Homestuck fandom saw itself as. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I remember back in the day, like I was Yeah, I was watching this and I was rewatching it, and I was like, so by this time I was still really into Homestuck, but I no longer felt as emotionally invested, and it's because when all the different troll characters that Hersey introduced were based on different star signs, and so the troll that had your star sign was like your patron troll, if you like. So like if you were a Capricorn, then you were Aradia, the spooky dead girl, and that kind of thing. Mine was Tavros. Tavros being an extended joke about what if there was a loser in a wheelchair that everyone hated.
Yeah. It's a choice. You can do all sorts of things on the internet when you're making a comic.
You sure can. And sometimes those choices aren't great, and I got the short end of that stick. Speaking of which, there is it, throughout this entire 15-minute epic, we do just so you know, it's still a Homestuck thing. We do get a little joke at the end about Terezi being blind.
Yep.
Because of course we do. That's the Hussy difference.
It's like the big plot twist that's happened, and which is very difficult to understand. It's a plot twist, out of context and even in context. But even then, she doesn't know where that son is.
Yep. Great. But even though I had like taken a bit of an emotional step back, you know, I wasn't like registering like a Skya.net email address and that kind of thing. Unlike some people I know. But I was still like really so into the story and the lore and like reading all the fan theories and all that kind of thing. And I remember just the impact this had was colossal. And again, like you were saying earlier, this is when Tumblr is becoming a thing. Like Tumblr had been like rising for a couple of years at this point, but like 2011 is like this is like the peak Tumblr fandom era, right? This is the Super Hulock era. This is the, is this before or answer after the Onceler stuff? I'm not sure, I don't remember, but like all of the things that you kind of associate with like classic Tumblr, this is at the epicenter of, and it's fascinating.
So much history, so much weird history.
So much. Well, let's finish with history-wise by talking about the creator themselves, Andrew Hussey. So, like we talked about, like they got their start doing webcomics and other comedy things, comics with the unfortunately named Team Special Olympics. And then the MS Painted Adventures series. And then after this, you mentioned a visual novel. But I don't really know, and I don't think a lot of people who, even people who were big into Homestuck, I don't really think a lot of people know, when's Andrew?
Homestuck continued until 2016. That's when it ended. It was followed up by a kind of Hussey kind of oversaw the formulation of a game studio that was going to produce a Homestuck adventure game. There was a big Kickstarter about this. This is in fact when Homestuck like peaks in popularity, is in September of 2012, when the Kickstarter is happening. $2 million is raised. They're going to make a Homestuck adventure game, and then rather unfortunately, the production of this goes incredibly wrong in ways that have never been made particularly clear and are subject to a lot of debate within the fandom. There's a lot of like overstepping of boundaries of people cyber-stalking not only Hussey but people who were involved with the project, rumored to be working on it, trying to figure out what's going on. The game has been partially released. I think two of its episodes have, but the point that I'm trying to drive home here is that this very large sort of raucous fan base that had been cultivated throughout Homestuck's run had some bad tendencies and some unsavory elements to it that I think really by the end were taking their toll. And so shortly before or after the release of Psychonauts, I can't remember precisely when this episode dropped. Well, actually, the thing that I'm forgetting here is that in between all of this, there was also an epilogue to Homestuck that was published, and it was a sort of like collaborative effort between Hussey, some known writers, like fanfic writers in the Homestuck fandom, and then some of the Watt Pumpkin team. And it had a infamously divisive reception. There are large parts of that epilogue. It's kind of a traditional book. There are large parts of it that are intentionally kind of turning the screws on things that the fandom was very sensitive about and like was known to be sensitive about, right? It was intentional, and that resulted in a lot of like pushback that was directed at Hussey, but also like these co-creators and bad times.
Oh yeah.
After all this, Hussey eventually, around the time that Psychalonials, the visual novel follow-up, drops, gives an interview with Polygon, where they explain that Homestuck was a cult that they unintentionally created, and it has been hounding them ever since, and they would like to retire from public life. And that is more or less what has happened. Psychalonials is about a young woman and her friend who, at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, are stuck on Martha's Vineyard off the coast of Massachusetts in lockdown, and as a joke, decide to start a clown cult via Instagram that eventually becomes a kind of like vast worldwide QAnon-style movement that destabilizes all world governments. And yeah. Like, that's what happens there. And it tells you something about how Hussey felt about Homestuck at the end. The last I had really heard in terms of, like, things Hussey has done, so after the epilogue, there was also a follow-up project called Homestuck 2 that was being, again, written by some of the Watt Pumpkin team. It was not well-received, at least partly because it was caught in the aftermath of the epilogues, and then partly because of, like, things that actually happened in that comic that the reader base didn't like. Most recently, Homestuck 2 has been resurrected by a team headed by James Roach, who was one of the... I think he did some writing and music for Homestuck throughout in the first Homestuck game, and that is now running currently. He Hussey turned over like responsibility of that to Roach, and that is like the last thing I have heard in terms of like things Andrew Hussey has done. Andrew Hussey got to a point where was like, okay, you can bring this back. I'm not going to have anything to do with it though.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's entirely fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, hey, Andrew, if you're listening to this somehow, thank you, and I'm sorry. email us, though, fleshinthepancast@gmail.com. Would love to talk about your thing with clowns, because clearly there's something there to unpack. Wow. So, yeah, that's Homestuck. That's Cascade. That is also... that's our tunes for today. This has been an enormous deep dive, and I'm really grateful to have had you with us for it, Michael.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm glad we could finally make this happen. I'm doing the Sweet Brew and Hella Jeff thing here now. We're gonna like hug or whatever.
Oh, we haven't even talked about Sweet Brew and Hella. Never mind. Another time. Didn't the print edition come with a spoon? Anyway,
yes. and five ribbon bookmarks that are attached at random places to the binding.
Wonderful. I love it. I wish I'd got a copy. That is going to bring us to the final part of our show, which is going to be some of our listener emails. And I remember, you might remember too, that... on our last episode, we talked about the work of Weird Al Yankovic and a couple of very fun music videos for Albuquerque, yes, and Everything You Know Is Wrong. And in honor of that, we asked you, Flash Conteers, to email in and tell us your favorite songs about mundane things. Just completely mundane things. Tell us about them. And we have a couple we will read through now. Michael, if you'd like to start with this one from Elu.
Dear Flash in the Pancast, today's prompt is songs about something totally mundane. I only have one or two that come to mind. I actually have a bit of a hard time with this. So here we go. Point one. Inside from the game Sayonara Wild Hearts by Daniel Olson and Jonathan Eng, featuring Linnea Olson, a song about being out with friends on a riotous night and trying to find a moment to talk about feelings only to have them swept up and aside. And then a Woodkid Boat Song, which is just a song about sailing a boat. Which I claim is mundane on account of nautical authority. Happy summer, friends. Elu.
I mean, Boat Song is, like, that's just a really good song. I like Boat... Did I say Boat Kid? I think I said Boat Kid. Boat Kid is a great song by Woodsong. I like it a lot. Up emailed in and said, I was 100% pandering to Grant with the previous email. I goes on to say, the best song that is about something inconsequential, but is very good, is Gimme Chocolate by Baby Metal.
I fucking love that song.
It's a good song.
It's a simple kawaii metal song. Baby Metal, in fact, invented the genre, says Arp, about one of the singers wanting to eat some chocolate, but is a bit worried about her weight, and the song absolutely owns bones. And yes, I agree, it's a very, very cool song. Yes. I'm very fond of it. And Alex, if you want to take this last one here. So this one is from Cat.
So Cat says, oh boy, boy, it's me again. Hope you're doing well. There's a Japanese artist named Otsuka Ai who is constantly writing the weirdest songs. Side note, I am deeply in love with her. Back in 2005, she wrote a song called Ramen 3-Minute Cooking, and then they put what I'm going to assume is the kanji for that in there. I cannot read that. That is just about making cup ramen. 3 minutes is the amount of time recommended for keeping the noodles in hot water before eating. Full version of the song is exactly 3 minutes and can be used as a timer for cooking ramen.
You know what? The next time I make noodles, I'm going to use this song. Thank you, Kat.
As a close second, she also wrote a song about mosquito repellent. And killing mosquitoes. Ka means mosquito in Japanese, so that's what they're shouting to this delightful thrash rock beat called Katori Senko. She's many more like this. Please listen to her for Peak Weird BKKP, which stands for Before Kiari Pamu Pamu. Hope you enjoy these arguably deep cuts from Kat.
Thank you, Kat. Yeah, that is exactly the kind of thing I was hoping we would hear about. Yeah. Because that's such a neat idea, though. Like, hey, you like noodles? Use this song to help you noodle. I think that's great.
Yeah.
Michael, you have any favorite very mundane subject songs?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this. And I can't say that I do. Like, I don't, like, what are the boundaries on mundane, right? Because, like, I don't know, technically there are so many songs about having a broken heart. That's pretty mundane. The most unwanted song, which is about being unpleasant as possible, like, that's kind of mundane. I don't know, I can't come up with anything. I unfortunately I listen to too much epic shit, I must say.
Yeah, I mean, it would be great if it turned out that Dragon Force did a song about doing your shopping.
Yes, right? That's actually what I was thinking. I was like, yeah, I think of the Dragon Force. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorites is Tom's Diner by Suzanne Vega.
Ooh.
Which is just, you know, the one that goes... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a really good song.
Yeah, but it's just like a little snapshot of her life
and like she's missing someone while she sits in a diner and watching the people go back and forth. And it's very sweet. And also, like, a real earworm as well.
Oh, I guess, like, to be just, like, totally obnoxious. I've always been a little enamored of the Decemberists' apology song, which I don't know if it's, like, quote-unquote real, right? But, like, the positioning of the song is, like, the lead singer of the band, Colin Malloy, speaking to his friend Steven, who let him borrow a bicycle, and the bicycle got stolen.
I'm really sorry, Steven, but your bicycle's been stolen. I was watching it for you till you came back in the fall. I guess I didn't do such a good job after all.
Oh no.
And that's just it.
Oh no, that's heartbreaking.
The first line of the song is, I'm really sorry, Steven, but your bicycle's been stolen.
In my head, it's that House of Decline comic with Garnet and Steven Universe. But instead of saying, I think we're going to kill this guy, Steven, Garnet's saying, I'm really sorry, Steven, but your bicycle's been stolen. That's great. So I am going to, in honor of Hamsteak, I'm going to ask our listeners to email in for next time. This is your prompt. Tell us about the first fandom you got into.
Ooh.
I mean, like, whether it was, like, you know, I'm six and the Spice Girls are my life, or, or like, I ran a Golden Sun fan forum for 15 years.
Yeah! Hell yeah!
I'm telling on myself a bit with that one. Uh-huh.
Well, you know, the podcast email address, Tom.
I do, yeah. The podcast email address is flashinthepancast@gmail.com. And of course, for all other inquiries, suggestions, I'm so glad that we had so many people suggest that Perfect Circle video. like so many of the tunes we do because you, our listeners, say, hey, what about this? And then we take a look and we're like, yeah, what about this? So if you want to be part of that whole process, then you can email us suggestions, but also other comments, corrections. Did I get anything wrong? Probably. Love mail, hate mail, all that good stuff. You can send to flashinthepancast@gmail.com. And now we've reached the part of the show that Michael's been waiting for this entire time. The plugs.
Oh, I thought we were going to talk about more Homestuck.
Well... Well, you can leave with that if you like. Michael, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people find you and the things you do?
So I'm on not so much, but you can like find me on the Evil Bird website, Warren is Dead. I'm also on Blue Sky, but Blue Sky's boring. Don't go to Blue Sky. I'm on co-host is Lutz, L-U-T-Z, and the main thing you need to know is that if you want to hear like podcasts and stuff that I do, go to rangedtouch.com, like, you know, the Dungeons and Dragons move, rangedtouch.com, and you'll find all of the shows that we do, not just mine, but like ones, like there's a Baldur's Gate show that my co-host Cameron and his friend Danny do.
Oh, that's right.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're like right in the middle of their Baldur's Gate 3 playthrough right now, and it's a wild time.
Isn't that one called like Mages and Murder Dads?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
They started that show. That was actually the show that started Range Touch way back era when no one cared about Baldur's Gate anymore. They were brave enough to make a Baldur's Gate podcast. So you can check that out. And then, of course, like Just King Things, the show where we read the books of Stephen King, A Publication Order, Too Much Future, The Fallout Show, and Homestuck Made This World, which is completed. So if you want the full scoop on Homestuck beginning to end and you got 72 hours to spare.
I will say I do actually know someone who had never read Homestuck, but used that podcast as an excuse to start, and it does actually work as like a critical read-along podcast as well. So if you, dear listener, gentle faceteer, are willing to take that plunge and make that life decision, then at least you can do it with a bit of help from Kevin and Michael.
I'm glad that works. because absolutely while making the show, there were many, many moments where I was thinking, what is at the end of this? What is anyone going to do with all this stuff I'm recording? So I'm glad it works for a read-along.
I mean, again, that was also the Homestuck experience. Uh-huh. So, like, where is this going off through act after act after act? awesome, awesome. Well, thank you so much. Alex.
Yes.
You're online.
Yes.
Whereabouts?
You can find me on the artist formerly known as Twitter. twitter.com/dex01. I don't even know if twitter.com even goes to that fucking website anymore. Maybe it does. It probably does. You can find me on Blue Sky if you must. I also don't really use it very much. It's fine, I guess. I'm princesspunk.bsky.social on Blue Sky, and I am on I'm a co-host, co-host.org/DEX01. You can catch me streaming video games with my bestest friend in the whole wide world, Valmoon, most weekends. Not this weekend, I am too sick. I'm not going to do it. twitch.tv/xsplash3x for me and my good friend Vile just having a good laugh over video games. That's what we do. And if you want to check out my music that I have written, released, recorded videos of me playing by myself and with a band, you can find it all at alexvalentine.card.co. And that's me.
That's her. And finally, you can find me on the smoking remains of Twitter and on Blueski and on co-host, all under the name Gertrude Perkins. That's Gertrude PRKNS. Add the at bluesky.app thing if you're feeling nasty. You can find our show on Twitter, still @FlashITPancast. That's Flash It Pancast. You can also find us on our website, flashinthepancast.com, where you'll find links to all the cartoons we talked about today, all of our previous episodes. There are 112 previous episodes, not including this one, which is bonkers to think about. but there are some really good ones in there, as well as we have a master list of every cartoon we have ever covered before. And if you have enjoyed what you have heard today, if you would like to support the making of more of it, then you can go on down to Patreon, patreon.com/flashinthepan, where you can throw us some human currency. If you do that, then you get to listen to episodes a week early. And if you give us a little bit more currency, you get to be part of our very cool and chill Flash in the Pan Discord community, where we have been talking about Welsh kittens. Welsh tiger cubs, sorry. And Strong Bad's pronouns. So that's the level of discourse you can expect. but of course, if you are unable to support us with human money, and that is entirely reasonable, the best way anyone can support us is by word of mouth. Tell people you know about the podcast. That's it. Yeah,
that's how it works.
Yeah, yes. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your reading squad if you're doing the Dawn Trail.
Just in the raid chat, flashthepodcast.com.
Hey, you may say that, but like episode 87 perfectly syncs up to that one boss's moveset. So it's actually really good for training that run.
You're right. We actually did that on purpose.
Yeah, we knew in advance.
Yeah, we actually knew.
Yeah. Anyway, yes, tell your friends, share us around all over the place if you want more people to discover us, and that's about it. Thank you, as always, to our very gracious web host, Alicia E. Goranson. You can find her writings and recordings, including an upcoming new audio drama series, at alicia-goranson.com. And there's some good stuff there. Check it out.
I might be in there. Somewhere. Ooh. Maybe.
Very exciting.
I don't do any voice acting, but maybe my music shows up.
Ooh, that would be that'd be pretty cool. That would be pretty cool. So, after all that, Michael, thank you so much for being with us.
It was a pleasure.
And until next time, I've been Tom.
I've been Alex.
Well, I've been Michael. Still Michael.
And great sounds in counting bobbies like sheep. John.
Have a great flash. Flash in the pan.
Final countdown to clap for the end sync. 3, 2, 1. And that's it. Woohoo!